stance. The dice roll every random chance. Take off your coat and stay a while. We'll roll in that D percentile.
Hey Dave, Che, thanks for sharing your Fighting Fantasy design diary number one on skill, and I'm broadly supportive of the idea of three skill stats. I did kind of wonder actually whether it would be worth rolling a higher skill total and then having people spread that out between three different stats, but yeah, actually rolling them all separately works just fine. I am a bit worried about the semantics of the names of those things. I'm not sure I like thief at all, and I'm not sure I like scholar. I might want something more, I know, verb-driven. I like the idea of fighting, perhaps. But then I couldn't think of any really good words for the other two. So, I don't know, maybe I'll just have to suck that up. On the question of plus two, plus minus two, or advantage, disadvantage, I personally think it's a little bit more Fighting Fantasy to have the plus two, minus two. I've played with the advantage mechanic effectively in Traveller 2E by Mongoose, and it's fine, but it does feel ever slightly odd. But cheers, man.
Hey, Dave, I think this design diary for Fighting Fantasy is a great idea. Of course, the first question that popped into my head, which you answered almost straight away, was, you know, how do you keep that Fighting Fantasy flavour? I'm a big fan of the likes of Maze Rats and Tunnel Goons, like you say, but with light systems, it's easy to sort of wander into the territory of the others, which is not necessarily the problem. But I'm pleased you're really zeroing in on that Fighting Fantasy feel. The skills idea, yeah, I like the way they handled it in Maze Rats, taking the sort of like the essence of the classic character classes. You've got spellcasting that sort of mashes the cleric and the wizard together, but you can bump up your fighting ability, or you've got them sort of thief type extra dice bumps in Maze Rats.
Hey Dave, Jason here, Nerds RPG Variety Cast. Just listen to your first year, I don't know, what do we call them, Fighting Fantasy Diaries. I'm in the van, so I'm not looking at it, looking at your show notes. So I really like what you've laid out so far. I'm definitely picking up what you're putting down in the parlance of today's youth. But so the using three stats, or, you know, breaking skill up into three things, obviously I agree with that because I've suggested that in the past, so I'm all for that. I think saying roll under makes a ton of sense. I like roll over. If I was going to design something like that today, I think I would do roll over, and I think as your skill increased, I'd use increasing die sizes, so you'd still be able to roll a one and fail, but you'd have a better chance because you have a bigger die size. But I think that complicates too much. I agree with you. You need to stay to the spirit of the books, and so roll under is what we have. As far as a plus two, minus two, or advantage, disadvantage, I can go either way. I kind of like plus two, minus two, because it's going to match what's in the books. It's easy. It's simple. And I don't know that Shandy Andy owns 3d6. I think Shandy Andy might only own 2d6. So it might be easier for him if we just kept the plus two, minus two. I'm just trying to think of your listener base here. But I can go either way, honestly. Thank you so much for doing this. I really, really appreciate it. I'm enjoying it, and I'm looking forward to the next installment. Take care.
Hi, Dave. Spencer here. I've just been thinking over what you were saying about that third stat. Do we need an intelligence stat? And I'm inclined to agree that you probably don't, and that possibly that third stat could be magic. But I'm wondering if it might be more interesting to have the third stat just be a special stat, which could be magic, but might be some other ability the character has that's not covered by their strength or their dexterity. And then have that, rather than it acting like the special skills in Dungeoneer, it's a stat on its own, rolled with 2d6, and it doesn't kind of interfere with the other two stats, if that makes sense.
Hi everyone, it's Dave. So what you just heard there was all of my feedback played in one big block about my first Fighting Fantasy design diary. So you heard Che first up of Roleplay Rescue, followed by Colin Green, Spike Pitt, then Jason, Nerds RPG Variety Cast, and Spencer, Free Thrall of Keep Off the Borderlands. Thanks very much to all of my callers on the Fighting Fantasy project. I'm very appreciative of that, and I will say something about I'll pick up on I think pretty much everything that you contributed. So thanks for that. So the quick recap then, what I'm aiming to do is to come up with like a one page insert that you could add to the rules that you've already got in any of your Fighting Fantasy game books that would give you the bare minimum of mechanics, rules that you needed to say, right, you've got those rules, now you can play an RPG. So my guiding principles have been the bare minimum. What do we really need to add? Actually, we don't need to add anything. You can do a perfectly good effort with the rules as written. They don't cover everything, but they're basic enough that you can make a ruling. We're going to play the Riddling Reaver, the worms, tonight. I'm going to run as much as we can get through with the worms, and we're going to play the rules as written in the Riddling Reaver, and they're pretty close to the game book rules, and you can do a perfectly good game, I'm thinking, with them. But my principle has been, well, what are the frustrations you're going to run up against pretty quickly if you're using the rules as written? And the biggest one, I think, is that you've pretty much got only the one stat, your skill stat, which covers everything. So you're either great at everything or you suck at everything, and that's the only real distinction between the characters. So what I propose, and it seems to have been unanimously well received, is that you roll skill in the same way, but you roll it three times over for three distinct areas of activity. I am thinking, I sort of agree with Che about the semantics of him. I'm thinking maybe an adjective is what we need. So maybe the first one might be martial skill. The last one, think about what Spencer says. Yeah, I may be moving that direction. When I talk about magic, that's the thing I'm going to do next. I'm bearing in mind what you said, Spencer. I'm wondering if maybe arcane skill is what we want there. I still think we could do a lot worse than fighter, thief and scholar. But I don't think they're exactly right. But if I went with martial skill and arcane skill, that middle one, which covers, well, thief is your normal kind of category, but I'm thinking it's going to cover your exploration things, you know, your climbing and your leaping, your agility. I'm thinking it will probably also cover ranged weapons rather than them coming under martial skill. You're never going to get it exactly right. But definitely that principle of having the three randomly rolled skill stats has been broadly well received. The thinking behind that was to have some distinction between characters, so there's more variability between characters because there are three stats for them to differ on, and it reduces the likelihood that based on those initial rolls you're either going to be excellent at everything or suck at everything. Hopefully you'll have a more sort of interesting character with some interesting strengths and weaknesses. So to what I wanted to talk about today, I wanted to talk about how I'm going to do magic in my little one sheet Fighting Fantasy edition. And I thought of going through and giving an account of all the various different ways that magic has been done in the Fighting Fantasy books. There are quite a few, actually. I mean, the big ones, the big options are the way the Riddling Reaver does it. The Riddling Reaver does it with a sort of spell slot system, but it's also got a roll to cast system. So if you opt to be a wizard, you roll your magic stat, and I think you roll 2d6 plus 6, and then you roll 3 dice under your magic stat. And then that gives you... Yeah, so it's 3 dice, which is a little bit annoying. I think it's just 3 dice because they wanted you to have more spells per session. One of the things your magic stat does is give the number of spells that you can cast in an act. So it gives you your number of spell slots, and you can prepare. There's a spell list. You can prepare any spells for those lists. You can prepare multiple castings. So I think they just wanted more than you would get if the magic stat was rolled on D6 plus 6. But I find it a little unsatisfying then that when you roll under your magic stat, you're rolling 3D6 under your magic stat. But that's quite nice. So it's got then two sides of spell descriptions, few spells, can't remember how many, not a great huge list, but enough to inject some interest into the session. So that goes the way of having a dedicated wizard character. It says only one character can be a wizard, but that gives them access to the whole spell list, and then you've got this 3d6 roll under magic stats. That's one way you can do it. When you cast a spell, you roll to succeed, and if you fail, you lose the slot and you don't cast the spell. Then there's the way, so there were the, nobody's talked about these, we didn't talk about these on the Worm, I haven't mentioned them in an episode, but there was the sort of Fighting Fantasy Plus set of books, the sorcery books, which Steve Jackson wrote, which you'd always find listed in the inside cover of your Fighting Fantasy books, but they were slightly separate series. They were the sorcery series, and there were five consecutive books in which you played a spellcaster character, and they actually had quite a lot of rules for magic, and it's quite an interesting magic system, a little bit more complicated than I would want to add in a little supplementary guide to how to roleplay in the Fighting Fantasy world. And I think that's kind of the problem. Both of those, if I was going to add those in, well, the Riddling Reaver, you know, it's got a set of spells which all need their own spell descriptions. The sorcery one is really quite complex. It is quite good fun in the books. People have got a lot of nostalgia for it. I think Botley says he was inspired by that when he put together his version of Advanced Fighting Fantasy. So that's one option if you want a dedicated wizard character. In the Riddling Reaver, you kind of pay for the privilege of being a wizard, so your skill stat is lower and your stamina stat is set at minimum. So there's the way it's done in Riddling Reaver, there's the way it's done in Sorcery, then there's the way it's done in Dungeoneer, the original Advanced Fighting Fantasy books, where you got a magic stat. It was an optional special skill. Again, you had to pay for it. As many points as you put in your magic special skill then became a reduction to your overall skill stat. But then within that, it was a point-based system where you spent stamina to cast the spells. And again, you'd roll to succeed, two dice now under your magic special skill. And if you failed, you still lost the stamina, but you didn't cast the spell. But you could try again in the next round. And then you always had access to as many spells as you knew. And that's quite nice. And it had quite a big spell list. And the spells had varying costs. Some cost one stamina, some two, some four, some six. One, I think, the death spell as high as 10 stamina points. I mean, when I was playing that, I never really liked the idea that your spells were sucking directly on your stamina. So you cast a spell to help people in combat, but you effectively take a couple of hits for the privilege of doing that. And certainly one of the things I house ruled a mana stat, which you would spend first, but then you could still delve into your stamina if you wanted a little bit extra and you wanted to cast more spells when you'd run out of mana. I found that more satisfying. But again, what I'd be adding to the game would be a spell list. And I thought, well, actually you could do this because you've got that varying point buy system. You could perhaps give some general guidance. Rather than a spell list, you could have a free-form magic system where you could say, well, players can make up their own spells and then the GM would assign them a cost. You know, and you could give a description of what a 2-point spell looked like and a 4-point spell and a 6-point spell. You give general guidance. I'd probably want to be introducing a mana stat rather than having spells cost stamina. If you dig through the books, you'll find there are a couple of other sort of magic systems scattered around the books. So there's a couple of other books that have got a couple of pages inserted explaining how magic is treated in that particular book, as I recall. Now, I'm not sure I want to go with any of those systems on reflection. The reason being, I think the standard Fighting Fantasy experience is that you are not a spellcaster. You know, you're an adventurer trusting their sword, but you do encounter quite a bit of magic, and occasionally you pick up magic items which will be useful to you on your quest. In fact, a lot of the books depend for your final resolution of the story on your having gathered the right magic items. Now remember, I've introduced these three skill stats. For want of better names at the moment, I'm going to still call them Fighter Skill, Thief Skill and Scholar Skill. So on the one hand, I want that scholar skill to pay off. I want it to be actually valuable to the players. But on the other hand, I am drawn to the spells as equipment approach that you might find, for example, in Ben Milton's Knave, or to a certain extent, Into the Odd. So what I am proposing is some kind of meeting in the middle. So I want to have a magic stat that actually counts in the game. But also I want to say that the adventurers are not, they're not wizards themselves. They may have some facility to use the magic items or the magic scrolls that they find. You know, some possibility of there being differences in skill levels between them. But basically I want magic to be, at least as far as the players are concerned, to be located in whatever kind of kit they pick up. So there are powerful sorcerers, kindly wizards and the like, evil necromancers in the world, which the players have to deal with, but they themselves will not be professional wizards. So how am I going to do that? So I've got the magic stat, because if you remember, I'm going to have players roll three stats in character creation. Then what I want to do is I want to say spellcasting is linked to scrolls. But scrolls aren't single cast necessarily. They have a certain kind of built-in recharge. So how I'm going to do this is, and also I don't want to have a big long spell list or an exhaustive description of scrolls or anything. I want to do a one-page insert. So I want to give GMs freedom to make up whatever they like. I don't even want them to be having to balance the spells or decide what level they should be, or decide what difficulty they are, or decide what point cost they should have. So here's where I'm going with this. I want a spells as equipment kind of system influenced by Ben Milton and Knave. And then I've taken some influence actually from Numenera, because I want spells to have some kind of depletion mechanic. So this is how I'm going to do it. But I also want GMs to be able to make up any kind of spells they want without having to worry too much about whether they're going to be game-breaking or appropriately balanced. So I'm going to take inspiration here from Numenera. I've talked about this before on multiple episodes. I really like the way that Numenera in the ciphers can give away all kinds of game-breaking powers, because they are one shot. So players have to choose when they're going to use them. They can do a really nifty thing for one session, but then that cipher is expended. So they're not going to be constantly breaking sessions in the same way. So I quite like that. I want the GM to be able to make up scrolls on the fly, give them some effect, and then to not be punished later for having given a character a really awesome spell and having to go back and retroactively adjust it in some way. So the inspiration I'm taking from Numenera is to build some kind of depletion. Artifacts in Numenera deplete. They have something like a usage die. It's not as sophisticated as the usage die. So this is how I'm going to do spells. And I'm thinking I can extend this to magic items. So where magic items have charges, wands, things like that, they will also have this built-in activation roll and depletion. So what I'm going to do then is I'm going to say, right, you use your magic score to activate magic items, or probably more commonly, to cast scrolls. So you pick up a scroll, and a scroll will have a couple of lines of spell description, whatever the GM wants to give the player. That's what the spell does. And they don't have to worry about how game-breaking it might be, because whenever the player wants to cast the spell, they have to roll under their magic stat. If they roll under successfully, then the spell is cast. If they fail, then the spell is not cast. And additionally, if they roll doubles, the scroll is depleted. It has no more castings. Okay, so this way, scrolls are equipment, spells are equipment, and what your magic stat will do is get you more uses potentially out of a magic item. And you can do this as well for magic artifacts. So if you've got a magic flaming sword, again, you roll your scholar skill. Sorry, I've been calling it a magic skill. I'm calling it scholar at the moment. You roll your scholar skill to attempt to activate it. If you fail to activate it, you look for doubles. If you don't get doubles, you can have another go at trying to activate it. And if you succeed, then, you know, it will have its flaming power for that encounter. So this way, spells and items are ephemeral. They can have whatever effects the GM wants to give them. The GM can be happy knowing that they're not going to break the game because, well, players will either just use them until they're depleted, or they'll hold on to them and only use them when they really, really, really count. And then the advantage to players with the higher scholar skill is that they'll probably, because they're going to succeed more, they'll probably get a few more uses out of each item. Yes, just final bit of clarification. This wouldn't necessarily have to be for every magic item. There can be plenty of always-on magic items, but definitely for scrolls, spells, and anything that should have limited uses or depletion. So the other thing I like about this is that it's getting the most out of the dice. So that doubles will deplete. I was kind of thinking, well, there aren't any precedents for that in the game books, but actually, from playing the Riddling Reaver, refreshing my memory of the Riddling Reaver, and this may even be where I got the idea from, because that game is absolutely in my background, but I did see there are rules when the characters try to scale the tower in the very first scene of the Riddling Reaver book. Obviously, to climb, they roll under skill. But then it actually says, you know, kudos to the writers, I think, for getting the most out of that die roll. It says if they, additionally, so, I mean, they roll under skill, and if they fail, they don't make any more progress. That's as high as they can climb. I also like the way they express that. So it's not round by round, try again. It's keep rolling. When you fail, you can't get any higher. But then they say, additionally, if they roll doubles, there's a chance they'll fall off. And that's when you roll a test for luck, not to fall off the tower. And I think it's really nice, really good precedent within the Fighting Fantasy game books for what I want to do. On that topic, one can't resist trying to get the absolute most out of the die roll. So additionally, I'm going to say when you try to use a spell or activate a magic item, double one, remember it's a roll under system, double one is going to give you some marvellous, transcendent, extra game-breaking effect of the, you know, by negotiation or by GM decree. And of course, double six will not only deplete the item, but it will also bring about some magical mishap. And there is a precedent for that, of course, in Dungeoneer. And then I thought, well, you know, if I'm going to treat spells that generically, so the spells can do whatever the GM decides they can do, I can't resist a little bit more guidance, which would enable the GM to just get the most out of the possible dice science. So what I like about Fighting Fantasy is you've got everything on D6 or 2D6. I think that would be the assumption that that's how many dice you got. You've got 2D6, so we're not going to go any higher than that. But I might give an indication of, you know, within having 2D6, how much your magical effects might be able to get out of the dice. So, for example, for damage, rather than whatever I decide for standard damage, on which more in future, you might say, well, maybe spells do a die roll damage, D6 or 2D6. I decided against the advantage mechanic in general for easy or hard tasks. We went with +2, -2. But there's no harm in offering the advantage mechanic for the... Oh, that would require 3 dice. Ah, that's interesting. That's another reason not to use the advantage mechanic, actually. So the advantage mechanic that I like, if you've got a 2d6 system, is that you roll 3d6 and then you either take the 2 highest or the 2 lowest, depending on whether it's advantage or disadvantage. But perhaps I'm... Yeah, so I'm in 2 minds about whether I'd offer that, because that requires you to have 3d6. And that goes against what I just said. So maybe you'd offer the advantage mechanic. But I definitely want to offer some guidance on duration. So you got options. The Fighting Fantasy games, I think the Riddling Reaver did it, Dungeoneer certainly did it, was to give real-time durations. So a magic effect will last this many real minutes. I don't think I want to go that route. I want to go the route of game minutes, game turns, game hours, whatever. But instead of doing the standard, you know, roll 1d6, last that many turns or hours or days, or roll 2d6, it lasts that many turns or hours or days, I want to offer them something like a depletion die. So instead of deciding how many turns something's going to last and then marking them off turn by turn, having something where you say, okay, this is your die that you roll, you're looking for this number, and you roll that each round, and when you get the number, the effect depletes. Wow. Low flying helicopter, we are near an airport. So for example, if you think an effect should last roughly 6 rounds, then you could just say that has a d6 of depletion. So you, instead of counting the rounds, you roll a d6 at the end of each round, and if it comes up one, and obviously you can do a little bit more within that. You can say if it should be 3 rounds, then if it comes up one or two, something like that. I haven't thought through that exactly, but I just thought that's the right kind of guidance to give for magical effects, just to remind a GM of all the various different things they can do with the apparently limited 2d6 roll under system. All right, and I've now gone way over time, so do call in with your thoughts on how I want to handle magic in a minimal and interesting way, I hope, and I look forward to hearing from you.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to contact Dave, please leave a message on Anchor, email dpercentile@gmail.com, or find him on Twitter at D_percentile.